Tonight's shiur, Parshios Netzavim Vayelech. Pasuk Loma Shemaim Hi, Rav Reuven Karelenstein, Shlita, she should be well, tells Maisa, once a fellow boards a plane, and it's a regular ticket in the economy class. So he goes, he sits down, and as usual, you know, very uncomfortable sitting amongst all those people and very tight, you know, no leg room, etc. Fine, so he wants to stretch his feet at legs at a certain point. He gets up, you know, he walks around a little bit, and he happens to make his way to the first class section. And he looks around there, he goes, wow, what a machaya, what a difference. Nice big seats, comfortable, reclining, you know, this is geschmack. So he sees like an empty seat there, and he goes, Elias sits down there, kicks his feet back, goes, this is a machaya, what a difference. So he's sitting there, you know, closing his eyes, trying to get some sleep. All of a sudden, he gets a tap on the shoulder, and it's one of the flight attendants. So he says, yes. He says, excuse me, sir, can I see your ticket? So he goes, yeah, sure. He shows him the ticket. Here's the ticket, you know, tickets for the economy class. He says, excuse me, sir, I'm going to have to ask you to leave. He says, why? He says, because your ticket's for the downstairs in the economy. This is first class. He goes, so but what's the difference? There's an empty seat here. He goes, big difference. You know, it's there, it's $1,000 a ticket. Here's $5,000 a ticket, you know. He goes, oh, money. He goes, that's the problem. He says, okay, no problem. So he takes out his wallet, and he has to pay the flight attendant, you know, for the difference in the thing. So he says, no, sir, sorry. You have to understand. He says, you want to have a good seat up here? You have to pay down there. So we use that as, of course, a mashal, a nimshal, that so too, we got to Shemayim, right, we're going to want to, here, we'll do mitzvahs. Hashem says, no. You want a good seat up here in Shemayim, you have to pay down there. You have to do the mitzvahs down there, what to do, not up here. Here it's too late. Even though that's the case, normally, generally that's the pshat, the case, but there is a way to amass Tzchuyos, even in the next world, even once you answer, you're there already. What is that? When you have children, you have Talmidim who follow in your ways and they learn from you, whatever. So then all that gets racked up to your Tzchuyos that you can continually amass and then Shemaim, even after one's death. It's a nice vort. So we're getting close to Rosh Hashanah. One of the things we say and we do are the Simanim, we eat the a pomegranate. Rimon, and we say we ask Hashem, your son Shiyarbu Schuyosenu Kirimon, that we Hashem, you should make our schuyos, our merits great like the seeds of a pomegranate. So they ask a good kasha. He says, how can we ask Hashem to give us a lot of schuyos? It's up to us. Like we said, hey, we do the mitzvahs, we'll have schuyos. We don't. If we didn't do mitzvahs, asking Hashem to give us schuyos is not going to help. And if we do the mitzvahs, we'll get them anyway. So what do we have to miyar? Do we Hashem yiratzon sheyarbe schuyos einu kerimon? Well, what's the pshat? So Michal Zilber is the Gvaltik word based on what we said. He says that, let's say here, okay, I put the shir, record it, put it online, right? What can turn out from this? Could be that one person might listen to it. Maybe two people. Maybe 10 people. Maybe 100 people. Who knows? Or nobody. Right? You'll see it. Delete. Finished. Right? Nobody's going to listen to this. So how much schuyos I'm going to have, it depends on how many people listen. So even though shir is finished, not, that's it. I'm not doing anymore. But if people listen to it, that's mar b'torah. That's I get schuyos for that. But that depends on how many people listen. So therefore, we're asking Hashem that he should be marbi meschiyos, meaning that Hashem make it that a lot of people listen to this year. So I'll get these extra schiyos. That's how we can be marbi schiyos. Next, on the pasuk, same pasuk, Lo b'shamayim hi, it brings an interesting story from Rav Chaim Kreisworth, that's all. A famous, I think we might even mention before, he was a Holocaust survivor, and he survived the Derech Neis, Galui. We'll mention again just quickly, he was Vacher in Yeshiva, and there was a boy that came that was blind into the Yeshiva. And the story goes that he felt bad for this boy, and he gave him his bed to sleep in. They didn't have that many beds in those days in Europe. And he gave him his bed to sleep in because he felt bad for this blind boy, and he slept on the floor or whatever. Anyways, eventually the Nazis, Yimach Shalom, came to the yeshiva, and that was it. They started calling names, taking them outside and shooting them. That's it. One at a time, boom, 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 started shooting, killing all the boys in the yeshiva. So they came to Rav Chaim's turn, call his name, come outside. So the Nazi takes him outside, you know, takes him to go up against the wall to shoot him. But all of a sudden, he turns to Rav Chaim and he says, "You know what?" He says, "I like you." Out of the blue, he says, "I like you." He says, "You know what? I'm not going to kill you. I'll tell you what. You stand there, I'm going to shoot a little bit off, I'm going to miss you, just by a little bit. You fall down as if you're dead, and then when I turn around, you know, to get an next ball, you can run away." Well, he told him. Like, "Wow, I like you." Sure enough, that's what happened. He shot, he missed, he got up, he ran away, and the rest is history. So, story goes that he was, during the Holocaust, he met up with this man, and the man turns to me, he says, "Listen," he says, "I have a bank account in Switzerland with a lot of money in there, and I don't know if I'm gonna, you know, get out of here alive. And I have one son. I have no idea where he is, what's gonna be with him either, whatever. But there's a rule in the Swiss banks that if nobody touches the money, right, it's like an inactive account. Then if somebody comes with a special code that has the right code for that account, he gets to take the money from the account. So of course I know the code, it's my account. And I want to tell you the code so that if it happens that I don't make it and you do, I want you to try to find my son for me and give him the code so he can, he'll have the money. So you do that for me?" "Okay, why not?" You know, I guess, you know, he had to, of course, trust Rav Chaim. So he gave him this special code for a Swiss bank account. So sure enough, the Nebuch Shem Yimkom Damo, this Yid was, you know, killed by the Nazis. And Rav Chaim, as we know, survived. So from the time the war was over, he went on a search. Wherever, you know, he would go around being Marbitz Torah all over the world. Wherever he went, every time he always, "Do you know Plony Almoni? Do you know Plony Almoni?" Wherever he went, he'd ask if anybody knows this man. He never knows. Maybe he'll bump into him one day. This went on, of course, for a long, long time. Eventually, one day he was flying from Australia to America, whatever, and he sees this group of Yidden. And he's, "Again, do you, anybody here know Plony Almoni?" And he sees this one guy, very poor, you know, disheveled, ripped, you know, old, smelly clothing, whatever. He says, "It's me." You know, "You're Plony Almoni?" And he says, "Yeah." So, of course, he wanted to make sure. So he started, you know, asking questions, you know, about his father and this, whatever, you know, to make sure really it's really him. And it was. So he says, "Do I have news for you?" They say to him, "Why? I have the code to your father's bank account in Switzerland, and apparently there's a lot of money in there, and here it is." He gave him the code. He flew to Switzerland. I guess he borrowed money, whatever. Flew to Switzerland. Gave the code. Multimillionaire. Right on the spot. So that's the Maisa. And he used this as a also shtickel mashal, that sometimes, though, things aren't going well. And why? Because the person is just not—he's not using his code. There's this, everybody has his code. What's his code? His tafkid in this world. Person is not really doing his tafkid, and therefore he's finding out things aren't going smoothly for him. But anyway, just to put in the right code and jackpot, and he gets, and everything goes well, and he has tremendous hatzlacha. Everybody has to find out what he's supposed to be doing in this world and do so, and hope to be rewarded. Cryesworth. Okay. Next, on the pasuk Reina Sati Lefanecha Yom Asachaim Vesatov, brings here from the Ger Rebbe the Pnei Menachem Satzal. He says the Yid came to him and he says, "Rebbe, I have a problem." "What?" He says, "I keep finding myself giving my money to things. One after the other, it's this bill and another bill. It's income tax, and then it's the city, and then this, and one bill after another, bill after another. I keep giving money to this, giving money to that. Everybody wants money from me, and so I don't know what to do. It's driving me crazy. So Gary Rebbe said, let me tell you something. He says, when I was a kid, I once went to the bank, and I saw two people there. One guy comes up to the teller, and he gives the teller money. Fine. And he leaves. Another guy comes up, next in line, and he goes up to the teller, and the teller gives him money. So I remember as a kid thinking, wow, the first guy, I feel so bad for him. He had to give the teller money. He gives the teller money. And the second guy, he's so lucky, comes out of there with money in his hand, from the teller. He says, only after I grew up a little bit, I realized that I might have things backwards over here. The guy that gave money, why did he give money? And he's a wealthy man. He doesn't need all this money in his house. He goes to the bank and makes a deposit. He has a lot of money. He's not a miskin. He's not a sorrowful person. He's the rich one. And the second guy that's taking money out of the bank, why? Because he's a poor guy. He needs some money to eat, to pay back his debtors or whatever, and a little bit of money he has to take out. So here I thought the guy giving money is a poor guy. Meanwhile, he's the lucky one. So he says, I learned from here. He says, you never know who's the lucky one. You think I'm giving, I'm paying this, giving in. You never know that maybe that's where your hatzlacha lies in having to give money. You don't realize it, but that's where your mazel lies. We see from the story. He said, brought another mashal. He says, there's once a king that... the son of the king or whatever, and he was not very bright. And he sees goes outside one day, and he sees in the field this guy cutting things down. So he runs up to the guy, and he says, "What are you doing cutting down these nice flowers? Are you crazy? You're ruining the field. What are you doing cutting these nice flowers down?" So the guy turns to him and says, "Excuse me, what do you mean by cutting that? This is wheat. Okay? And you're supposed to cut the wheat. You cut down the wheat, and then that's when you make bread and cookies and cakes and all types of delicious things from. Right? It looks to you like flowers, not plants, it's wheat. This is what you're supposed to do with it." So too, he said, sometimes, things are getting cut down, and you think, oh, why is it getting cut down? You don't realize that sometimes that's what has to be, and that's the best thing, and that's the right thing. See, my seer means on a pasuk, Yuchayecha Baruch Yamecha. There's an elderly Yid from Cholon, about 90 years old. He comes from a place called Bukhra. His name was Reb Benzion HaKohen Pinchasov. And there's a story about his father, Reb Yitzchak. And he lived in the time, also time of the war, Second World War. And he was a big Baal Chesed. And he recalls what happened was, my father said he used to feel bad for people, trying to help whenever he could. And once, this was during the war, so there were a lot of people running away, refugees running away from the Nazis, whatever. And he saw once a group of poor Yidden that ran away, didn't have where to go. And he took them home. And not just one or two. He says there are 17 people he took into our home. And he didn't ask for any money, whatever. And he provided for these, 17 people. Stuck one here, stuck one there, whatever he could in the house. And helped them, to help these people. It was a big Baal Chesed. Anyways, story goes that my father, he said, heard that this in the train, there's a train coming in. It is a big Talmud Chacham coming with his wife and daughter also. And also no place to stay, where to go. So he ran out to the train, and who was it? It was the Chabiner Rav. So he said, "Please, Rebbe, can you please come to my house?" where he's going to stay, but okay, come to my house. And he brought the Chabiner Rav to his house, and he was quickly thinking, where can I put him? So he said, I know, the laundry room. He had a little tiny room, dark little room where he kept the clothing and thing, washing. So he cleared out all the clothing, whatever, and he put a little table, chair for the Chabiner Rav in there with a little candle, whatever, and he can sit there and learn. And that's what he did. Chabiner Rav sat there and learned in his laundry room. What happens? One day, he gets in the mail a tzav giyus, from the army, right? The call from the army. And he reads it, and it says that he has to go to the front line. It was a war between Germany and Russia. And he's asked to go to the front line. and they said, bring all your possessions, because that's it. You know, you might not ever come home again. So he, you know, he was beside himself, what's going to be, and that. And okay, but what can he do? You know, he has to go. So before he left, he knocked on the door, and where the Chabiner Rav was learning, and he said, Rebbe, I got a little problem on my hands. And he told him about, you know. So the Rebbe said, nothing bad's going to happen. So okay. So finally the army came to get him, and they kissed his wife and five children, you know, goodbye, and thought, maybe I'll never see you again, you know, took his belongings, and he went to the station, you know, the army. So he gets to the army, and there's the guy behind the, you know, the glass over there, and he says, you know, can I see your papers, please? So he gives him the papers, you know, that he got in the mail, and the guy behind the glass looks up at him, and he says, there must be some mistake. This isn't you. Goodbye. Go home. He says, it's not you. What are you going to want? What do you mean not? He knew it was him. His paper, his name, his address, everything. It's not you. Go home. Okay. So he went home, and that was it. And he survived. So obviously, you know, made the connection. It was obviously from the bracha of the Tribuner Rav, but it was a bracha of the Tribuner Rav, because which he deserved for being such a Baal Chesed and taking the Tribuner Rav even under those conditions. Okay. Move on to Parshas Vayelech. It says in the pasuk, "Ben Miyash Hashrim Shana Anochi Hayom Lo Chalod Lotzeis Lavo." So Moshe Rabbeinu says, "I'm 120 years now, and I can't go in and out anymore." So Rashi brings two pshatim here. First, he says, "Hayom Lo Yemei Shnosai, but Yom Zenolati, but Yom Zemut." He says, today I was born on Zayin Adar, today I'm going to die in Zayin Adar. Number one. And second pshat, davar acher, let's say, v'lavo, means b'divrei Torah, melamechi, nistamu mimenu mesoras umayonus hachokma. That Moshe Rabbeinu, he couldn't, this wellspring of Torah that came from him stopped at that point. Fine. So if Yitzhak Nevensal, the Sefer Dudai Yitzhak, he asked, how did Moshe Rabbeinu know he was going to die that day? Said Hashem, all Hashem told him was Hein Kirvuya Mechalamus. He says, your day is getting closer to die. He didn't say you're going to die today. So how did Moshe Rabbeinu know he's going to die today? So he says, very nice. The second pshat in Rashi is explains the first pshat. First Rashi says, Moshe says, I'm going to die today. How did he know that? That's the second pshat. Meaning, the Gemara says in Shabbos, Kufnun Beis Amud Aleph, Tanya, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, Amir, Talmidei Chachamim, Kol Zman Shem Hizkinim, Chachma Nitosef Es Abahem. As the Talmid Chacham gets older and older, he gets more and more knowledge, Torah knowledge. So Moshe Rabbeinu fell, as he was getting older, more and more Torah knowledge. But as Rashi says in the second pshat, then all of a sudden, one day he says, Nistamu. Yeah, where's my knowledge? I lost it. What's going on? Ah, so that means I'm not going to get any older. Because the Talmud Chacham, as he gets older, gets more Torah knowledge. I just lost it. Must be I'm not getting any older. Meila, he knew that today he was going to die. This brings here a Shaila, Pasuk Matzo Ros Rabos Vitzaros. We should not know of such Shailas, but there was an Avreich. And what happened was, when he was a boy, he had a small growth. And the doctors detected it, and they suggested that even though it's very small, but he should have it removed, because if he doesn't, it can develop into something serious. So this Avreich came with the Shaila. He says, that's what happened when I was a boy. My father didn't take care of it, though. He didn't have it cut out or whatever. And sure enough, the doctor was right. Now I'm fighting for my life. It grew or whatever, and now it's a very serious story. And so what was the Shiloh? His Shiloh was, he says, he wanted to know whether he could or should tell his father about what happened. Meaning, on the one hand, if he tells his father what happened, his father's going to go crazy. Right, he's going to feel so guilty. I mean, he's going to realize it was because of him. He couldn't take care of it when he was a boy. And look what happened, as the doctors predicted. So his father would go crazy out of guilt. But on the other hand, he said, I really want to tell my father, because I want him to daven for me. And because who can daven, you know, more from the depth of the heart than a father for a son that's sick? So I want my father's feelings. So what should I do? Should I tell him or not tell him? So the final psak that was given to him was that he shouldn't tell his father, should not, because of the, you know, repercussions and feel, make his father feel terrible. But he can daven for him. So Rav Zilberstein says, don't worry, we'll daven for you in the kollel, and I'll work out. On the pasuk Vanochi Hastir Astir Panai Bayomahu, Hashem says he's going to hide his face. The Mashkiach from Lakewood, of Nassen Vachvogel Zatzal, once he was walking the street and he sees these group of kids playing a game. So it looked interesting to him, so he calls over a couple of kids. He goes, well, what game are you playing? What's this game? So they say, it's called hide and go seek. He says, hide and go seek, how does that go? How do you play? He says, well, we take turns, one kid hides, and then everybody has to look for him, and then, you know, you find a kid and you have to run back and then whatever. So he says, oh, that's interesting. And so the kid that hides, you know, do you usually find the kid that hides? So they said, yeah, it's okay. Sometimes it's hard. We have to look really, really hard. But eventually, you know, we usually find the kid. Yeah, that's what we do. So it was very interesting. He came back to yeshiva, and he called the bachurim together. I have to give you a shmooze, what I just saw today. So what? And he told them about the hide and go seek. He says, oh, what's shaykes? So he said, says in the pasuk, Anochi astir astir, Hashem says he's going to hide himself from us. But what? We see that a person could give up hope, mityayish, and say, oh, Hashem, you know, says he's going to hide. Hashem hid himself from us. What's going to be? That's it. Hashem has hid himself. But we see from this game that the kids are playing, you know, the kids said, if you try really, really hard, eventually you find the person that's hiding. So too, even though Hashem's hiding, if we really, really try hard, we can megala Kodesh Baruch Hu, even in the time of Hester Panim. If we don't, it's a sign that we're not looking hard enough. It's up to us to find Hashem. And the pasuk has a Shira Zos. It's a beautiful, beautiful story from about Rav Yosef Shlomo Kahaneman, the well-known Panovitcher Rav. Says that once he was, he did plenty of, you know, raising money for the yeshiva, or build upon the yeshiva. So he was once staying by this certain man, you know, his house, America, whatever. And he came back from a long day of fundraising, and he was like exhausted. He was about to, you know, he collapsed on the couch, you know. The Balabai runs up to him, says, here, I can get you something to eat, a tea, or some cake, something, whatever. And he just looks up and he says, if you want to do something for me, he says, pass me the phone so I can call another couple of gvirim to see whether I can get some money from them also. Anyway, the Balabai was taken aback. And he says, where do you get the koichos, you know, to do all of this? You're not a young man, and nonstop. And where do you get these koichos from? So he says, you want to know where I get it? I'll tell you where I get these koichos from. So this goes way back when I was a little boy, 11-year-old boy. Says what? Says in our town, we had there was a Rav, Mar Dasra, you know, in our town. And my mother, she used to, every Purim, make a nice shlachmanis for the Rav. Cakes and cookies she would bake, whatever. And usually me and my brother would go and bring it to the Rav, you know, every Purim. One year, it's before Purim, my father comes home and says, this year I'm going to have a chelik in the shlachmanis also. So he said, I always, you know, money comes from me to buy the, you know, the flour and stuff for the cakes and cookies. I always have a chelik, but this time a real chelik in the shlachmanis. I said, why? So he pulls out a gemara, and he said there was a traveling salesman for a svarim salesman. He'd go from town to town, and I saw you selling some svarim. I look and I saw a full nice Maseches Baba Basra. Right? In those days, people didn't have like five shasim. You know, yeah, shas was a rare. Nobody had a shas. You know, people had an odd Maseches here or there, maybe, you know, if they're lucky. So same with the Rav of the town. So he saw this nice, you know, Maseches Baba Basra. He said, oh, I'm going to buy this and give it to the Rav, you know, for shlachmanis. So Purim came along. Here, the point of a drum said, and my mother, you know, made the cookies again and gave the cookies. My brother took the cakes and the cookies, and I brought the Gemara to bring to the Rav. So we get to the door, Rav answers the door, my brother gives the cookies as usual, and then I say, here, my father wants to give us the Rav as his, you know, shlachmanis to the Rav. So he said, I'll never in my life forget what I saw.
says the Rav took the Masechet. He said, "Oh, I'm so happy. Masechet Bava Basra." He took it, he hugged it and held it to his heart, and he says, "Oh, Masechet Bava Basra, it's unbelievable, Masechet Bava Basra." And he says, and you know what he did? He got up and he danced around the table. He danced and danced and danced for 20 minutes. Non-stop dancing for 20 minutes with this Gemara. Oh, Masechet Bava. And the Panim Rav Shirah wanted to show this, you know, his Balabas, and he said, like this, and he got up, even though he himself was falling off his feet, but he got up, and he said, like this, and he showed him how he danced. 20 minutes he was dancing. And that's not the end. He says, after that, he turns to his wife, the Rebbetzin, and he says to her, "Do you want to give me Shlach Manos this year also?" So his wife says, "Okay, why not? What would you like?" She says, "Well, you know you koveya the Purim Suda to be at 5 o'clock, right?" She said, "Yeah." "Well, if you want to give me Shlach Manos this year, can you push off the Suda for 1 hour till 6 o'clock? And in that hour, make sure nobody bothers me. You know, everybody comes for anything. Nobody's to bother me for that 1 hour. Just let me sit and learn this Bava Basra for an hour, without uninterrupted." So the Rebbetzin said, "Oh, sure, of course." And he goes, "Oh, yeah. Thank you so much." And again, he picked up the Gemara again and hugged it and danced again for another 25 minutes, dancing with this Gemara. He said, "When I saw that, I decided, I was an 11-year-old boy," he said, "when I said, I'm going to devote my life to Torah." When I saw that. So it brings out over here, you know, this Rav, in like what he did, the Messiah, you know, his love, who would have realized that he built Panovich Yeshiva? Right, where did Rav Kahana would have built the yeshiva get his kokos from? From this incident, he's seen his Rav dancing around with this Gemara. It comes out that this Rav, we didn't, without, of course, realizing it, but this way he acted had such an effect. He built Panovich Yeshiva. Okay, let's end off with another. Similar mice that it's seen in other places, but it brings out the same idea. There's once a fellow, he lived in Florida, and he was a Baal Tshuva, and he was a big supporter of Torah. You know, after he became from, he built day schools, and you know, he's a wealthy guy, and he built day schools and etc. And he did tremendous things for the town. So somebody asked him also, like, "Where did you get this push, you know, to do so much?" So he said, "Once I went to Eretz Yisrael, and I went to the coastal. Of course, everybody goes to the coastal. You're touring, you know, you come to Eretz Yisrael. So I went to the coastal, and I saw a guy davening there, standing at the coastal and davening with tremendous yislavos, excitement, and davening. I never saw such a thing before. He's davening and davening, crying and whatever. And it made such an impression on me. I said, wow, you know, I want to speak to this guy. Who is this guy? What is this guy? You know, what's he all about? It's unbelievable. I never saw somebody with such devotion, you know, to God. So I wanted to go up to him, but as soon as he finished davening, like he disappeared, and I couldn't find him anymore. Said, but what I saw made such an impression on me that when I got back to America, I said, oh, you know, it changed my life. And I decided I'm going to devote my life to Torah. So I want to be like that also. You know? So it comes out, you know, as they say, that, you know, this guy, whoever he was, we don't know who he is. I don't know who he is. Nobody knows who he is. But when this guy's going to come to Shemayim after 20 years, they're going to say, look at the institutions you built in Florida. You know, these great Torah institutions, how many Talmidim were learned there, etc., etc. He's going, Florida, wow. You know, I was never in Florida. What do you want? What, Florida? Who was that? What? So you never know what a person's actions, what effect they can have on people. So Hashem should see our actions, how we affect others, and all the schuyos, and like we said, hopefully Hashem we marbe our schuyos and allow us to grow greater and greater in Torah and Yerushalayim. And as such, Hashem should write us in the book of Tzedik and Giburim, as we say, Sheni kasev ni chasev l'chaim tovim aruchim l'shalom. And have a shana tova u'metuka.